Today we have the honor of welcoming three-time presidential candidate, former congressman, and author of the books that introduced Chris, Joe, and I to libertarian principles, Dr. Ron Paul. Dr. Paul, thank you for joining us.
Great to be with you. Looking forward to our visit.
So first we must ask about Syria. If we were to intervene in Syria, in your opinion, what are the dominoes that will be tipped over by that action?
Well, nobody can be certain about the only thing you can be certain of is that there will be some unexpected events occurred. It's always going to cost more and more people die than they expect. But, you know, even if that doesn't happen, let's say it comes off across from Obama's viewpoint relatively successful, I still think it's horrible, you know, because it's wrong to do it. It's not the way the law is written. It's not the way the Constitution is written. And if something halfway successful came of it, it would only encourage them. I don't think we have to worry about that. What we have to worry about are things going badly, which means the war could spread. You know, the Russians have a lot at stake over there, and they're moving vessels in there. Now, I don't think anybody, you know, is going to, on our side, deliberately fire on a Russian vessel. That'd be crazy. But somebody who would like to stir the pot would, and that could really lead to a lot of trouble. But it's bound to spread. The war will continue. It's been going on. This is part of the war to remake the Middle East. That's been going on now for 14 years. It's going to continue. So no matter what happens, what the consequences are, no matter what the Congress does, that will continue. But unfortunately, I think we should be very, very concerned and expect the worst.
As you look through the media over the last couple of weeks, as Syria has been debated, do you think the media and the American people have learned the lessons from the lead-up to Iraq and some of the propaganda that we experienced in the lead-up to Iraq? Do you see a difference now versus 10 years ago?
I think so, and I hope I'm not fooling myself, because always in the past it seems logically that the people wouldn't support it. But this has been going back all the way to World War One and Two. People didn't want it. The president's got elected by saying, "I'll keep you out of war, keep you out of war," and then they always turn around and get the people in the war. And the statistics were very much opposed, you know, going into both Persian Gulf War and the Iraq War, and the war propagandists were able to turn it around. But I still think there's reason to be hopeful that the people are more alert now than ever before. But they are very, very powerful. They talk with strong assurances. They speak, you know, like they have all the information, and they speak the truth. But governments have lost a lot of credibility with the economy and on foreign policy. And right now the messages are overwhelmingly in support of not going in and getting further involved in Syria. So it remains to be seen, but if we go by history, the war propagandists will win. And maybe it'll be a narrow victory. But the recent vote with the Justin Amash Amendment on the NSA legislation, excuse me, was very encouraging, because it was a coalition of non-leadership. It was sort of a grassroots effort by the junior members of the Democrats and the Republicans who came together, and the people supported, you know, that amendment to restrain the NSA. So that coalition is what I'm looking forward to. Maybe we're further along than we've ever been before, which in many ways satisfies, you know, both the progressives and the libertarians coming together on the issues that we agree on. So I think this is a crucial vote. And right now I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I predicted that they probably would get the authority with a narrow vote, and boy, do I hope I'm wrong on that. I hope they lose by a long shot is what I'm hoping for.
And Dr. Paul, your son Rand is rumored to be a contender for 2016. And lately we've seen more and more hostility towards you personally in the media. I know we saw some on MSNBC recently. How do you feel personally? How do you deal with misrepresentations of your beliefs and your character during these interviews? And what do you think the intention is behind that?
Well, you know, it's hard for me, because I know what they're doing. I'm not important in the sense that I don't have a vote, I don't go to Washington and that sort of thing. But I think it's the indirect way of Rand, I think, is good. I think he's very fluent. He knows how to present the message. and they fear him, and they don't want that message out. So he has a tough job because though he gets some benefits from what I have done, he also gets all the disadvantages in that if I have a position that the mainstream media can attack, they will, and they will distort, and they will do all these things. And I think it's a combination. They don't want our message out, and they don't want him to get further along. So I feel more badly about how it might hurt him than me getting hit again, because I've been living with that for a long time, and I sort of expect it. But the only thing that can compensate for that is just get more people waking up. And, you know, that little episode with MSNBC, you know, I didn't like what happened, but afterwards I thought, and a lot of people close to me said, no, this is beneficial. A lot of people, you know, were very willing to defend me and said it came out, you know, quite well. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, they're going to keep doing this. But I think there's a sentiment shifting. I think it's different than, say, the first time that happened to me in the campaign when Giuliani attacked me for being un-American, you know, for suggesting we had a deeply flawed foreign policy, you know, that I was unpatriotic and all that stuff. I think conditions have changed. I keep thinking if we win this vote, in many ways, it'll be vindication of the libertarian position of non-interventionism, and that's what I sure hope we can say after that vote next week.
So, Dr. Paul, millennials especially are very receptive to the message that many in the mainstream media, as you mentioned, fear, and they're also interested in politics. Aside from contacting the representatives, what should they, and for that matter, the rest of us, be doing to move the cause of liberty forward?
Well, it's going to depend on the individual. The most important thing is that each and every one of us, you know, study the issues and understand them and know how to defend them, become knowledgeable about how the free market works and why monetary policy is important and why it's patriotic to stop these wars and that you're not un-American to, you know, resist the government when they tell us that we have to do certain things. And understanding these issues and defending them as an individual, what you do after that is sort of up to the individual, and I was always told, and I believe that if you have information and you're well versed in things, people will come and ask you. And if they ask you sincerely about your opinion and you can give good answers, this is the way you change people's minds. I did that for a lot of years, and I usually went to college campuses and I'd get 5, 10, 20 people out to some small group and try to convert people over to the cause of liberty. Today, the audiences are bigger. There's more enthusiasm, and I think the whole generation of young people now are waking up, and they know the economy doesn't work. They don't like the violence of the wars. They like the whole idea of civil liberties. So I think conditions are so much better. But everybody can figure out what to do. There's no one thing. Not everybody should run for office, and not everybody should support candidates. But you can be teachers and writers and do work on the Internet. You can spread a message. But I think the most important thing is to be knowledgeable and have the right tone with people, because you read a lot of harsh language on the Internet, and a lot of people on both sides, you know, just sort of shouting at each other. That doesn't work. I think the only time it's important is if somebody respects your viewpoints and they come and ask you, then you know you're making progress.
Now, Dr. Paul, you've been very active since your retirement. You have the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. You've got your homeschool curriculum, the television channel, the Ron Paul Channel. What do you see as your goals and possibly your legacy in your post-congressional career?
Well, I don't think in terms of legacy. I hope I have some influence in moving the direction of the country toward, you know, confidence in the ideas of liberty and self-reliance. And that, I think, is happening not because of me, but because of many others as well. I mean, people do talk about Austrian economics now and free markets. So I think that's the most important thing. But I think of myself more as trying to get people interested enough to read and study and become educated rather than being political. You know, even though I was in politics all that time, I took a different course in staying put, obeying the rules, follow the leadership, bide your time, become a chairman of a committee, something like that, which I had no interest in. And my idea was to speak to people outside of Washington to try to get them interested. And I think that's happening, but there's a lot. It's so different now than when I was in college in the 50s. It was hard. If you questioned what was going on, it was hard to find any answers. You didn't have an internet. You had 3 TV stations. The professors all taught the same thing. And it took me a long time to find, you know, the literature and the economists that I agreed with. Today, there are many, many teaching in the universities, and the internet is just a wonderful opportunity, and that's why I'm making use of it, you know, both in the homeschooling curriculum, also in the Ron Paul channel, which is internet-related. And I think the tools are available now, and this is why I think we've made the progress. Not only because of our communication skills, but also the blatant failure of what they've been trying for 100 years. And I see the modern world, matter of fact, the whole world in terms of human history is very, very short compared to the billions of years that the universe has existed. So it's very, very short, and most of it's been introduction to the principles of liberty, but most of it's been war and killing. And I think that we could usher in a new age where people all of a sudden can use technology, steer people away from the violence. And the big contest going on there now is the government going to succeed in taking over the internet and taking away all our privacy and all our freedom of speech. So it's up for grabs right now, but right now we're enjoying a lot of benefits from the communications revolution.
So, Dr. Paul, as you mentioned, it's important to be knowledgeable about the issues. It's important to be able to articulate them correctly. And one particular area, you know, that I believe you cover in your manifesto, and one that that is very shocking to people, is the elimination of income tax. And that's one that that many of us run into resistance on. I was wondering if you could give us the quick, you know, pros and cons of such an approach. What would it take to truly remove this income tax that seems to be so ingrained in people, and how such an idea, not only, I mean, we all believe it is good, but how could that move forward and really make some serious positive change within our federal government?
Well, you have to remember that it's not a technical adjustment. You know, how do we raise money and keep doing the things that we're doing and get rid of the income tax and maybe have a flat tax or a sales tax or something like that? No, the tax problem, especially the income tax, is a reflection of what the people accept the role of government ought to be. So if your generation continues to believe that the role of government is to police the world, manage the economy, and tell people how to be safe so that they don't hurt themselves and tell you every little thing you can do in a nanny state. No, you have to have a huge government. It's going to grow. The liberties are going to be defeated. The wars are going to continue, and you can't get rid of the income tax. But the best example is we haven't had an income tax until this whole mess started. 100 years, we got the Federal Reserve, we got the income tax, we had a change in our foreign policy, we ushered in the welfare state. But it's all coming to an end. Keynesianism is essentially dead. So if they look back, they ought to study the economics from the period of time of the 1870s up until World War I. It was the greatest growth period we ever had. It was the period of time when we had the best example of using the gold standard, and the economic growth was probably the best in the world ever, especially for us in this country. But it's been totally rejected. So, and we, even with the imperfections of the 18th and 19th century, we didn't have an income tax, you know, until the 20th century. So, but if you want big government, you're going to have an income tax and a lot more, and that's what has to be rejected. They have to decide what the role of government ought to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Paul, we truly appreciate you spending your time with us this afternoon and the insights that you've provided to us. It truly is an honor to talk to you, sir. We're looking forward to seeing you September 10th at DePaul University here in Indiana. That should be a great event as well. Is there anything you'd like to add to this? Anything that you'd like to quickly note before we wrap up?
Nothing special other than the fact that I do enjoy coming to the universities and I do enjoy meeting young people because a lot of them give me encouragement by just listening to them and knowing that they're interested. So I get a lot of credit, but the young people should get a lot of credit because without their enthusiasm, who knows, I could become discouraged. I wouldn't want to do that.
No, not at all, sir. We truly do appreciate your time, and we cannot thank you enough for joining us, Dr. Paul.
Good to be with you.